everyone. Sifu Sylvain with you. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks for tuning in. My camera looks much better. Camera was a little bit wonky. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Sifu Sylvain. If this is your first time watching, it would probably be to your benefit to start at the beginning. But we're deep into my third volume of Nichiren Goshos here, and we've already done part one and part two of the entity of the wonderful and difficult to understand law. Yeah. Now, in part three here, we're going to start with a question, and in this part of the Gosho, we're going to answer or attempt to answer questions that I've heard since day one of Nichiren Buddhist practice, that as we continue to practice, we gain more insight into, and therefore becomes more and more profound the longer we practice. But the question revolves around, what are the characters of Myoho Renge Kyo? What do those characters mean? Why those characters specifically? On and on and on. Why do we chant? Why, you know, what are we trying to accomplish with chanting that we can't just do with our minds? And so forth. All variations of this question. Generally questioning or having doubt about Myoho Renge Kyo. But I want to make sure, and in this part it's critical that you understand, that being human, being in samsara, being in this form, we perceive, experience, and understand information and all that that word implies, and think, don't just think word processor information, because you'll get nowhere with that. But you know, that is the foundation of this question. Think information atomically. If you're not a fan of science, even if you're not a fan of science, I'm sure you understand that everything in our environment, including ourselves, is made of smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller things. Things smaller than us make us up, make up this table, or trees, and things smaller than trees make up what trees are made of, and those things are also made of things smaller than those things, until we get all the way down to molecules, atoms, particles, forces, energies. So I say all that not to confuse you, I hope, but rather I want you to think a little more critically about how we communicate, how we use language, how our minds, our conscious minds, create, distinguish, and store information to make it usable for us in samsara. So I'll give you, you know, my famous analogies. Some people are lucky enough to have a pool in their backyard. But for some of us, that pool in the backyard is basically a lake or a broad stream or river. Somehow or other, most humans have the experience of immersing themselves in water, even if it's just in a bathtub. But let's go with the pool example, just because. It's a body of water. Let's just say body of water. Forget pool. Body of water. And you've never experienced the body of water, save drinking water. That's the only reference point you have for body of water, immersing yourself in water. You'd probably be pretty stinky, but just go along with the analogy for me. So I could spend a lot of time telling you about what it feels like to be immersed in water. I could talk about it being refreshing. I could talk about it being cleansing. I could talk about it being always cooler than your body temperature. And we could do a deep dive into temperature all the way into heat transfer and what actually happens. Is the water colder than you? Perhaps, but why do you feel it colder than you? Because the heat from your body transfers to heat the water around it, everything looking for stability or balance. And by heat leaving your body, you experience feeling cooler. So you can say it's because the water's cooler, but in essence, the reason you feel the water being cooler is because it's withdrawing the heat from your own body, and your own body then senses, hey, heat is escaping, I feel cold, right? And you see how we can dig deep into every sensation of what it is to be immersed in water. This is like the provisional teachings of Buddhism. There's a tremendous amount of dissection in tracing how the human mind works and how it might compare to the Buddha mind. But you don't know the Buddha mind. You can only trace what your mind is doing, the human mind is doing, okay? Until we get to the Lotus Sutra. That's so I take you by the hand and I walk you out back to a nice large body of water, and I say, enter it with me. Let's go into the water. And now all that data, all that information, instantly or very quickly subsides after it makes all its relationships and goes, oh, that, oh, that, oh, that. Now that you know how to describe something you've never actually experienced, that knowledge helps you feel comfortable and knowledgeable and a sense of accomplished realization. But even without all that information, entering the water will change the way you feel and think about immersion in water. With the teachings, you have a sense of knowing. Without the teachings, you have a sense of perhaps shock, perhaps an intermittent realization that once you leave the water, you long for and you can't experience in any other way. You have to keep coming back to the water in order to enliven that experience. With knowledge, information about it, you have a way to get your human mind to recall it, re-experience it, albeit in a lesser way. This is like Myoho Renge Kyo. And so as we've already introduced in part two, the idea of metaphor versus actuality. And in this case, the actuality is given the label of law. And the law is this moment when, in our human mind, we actually manifest or realize our Buddha mind. We don't lose our human mind. We simply get expeditiously past its barrage, its gauntlet of questions and doubts, and we simply experience Buddha mind. As long as we stay in Buddha mind, we are expediently surmounting our human mind. And when we stop being in Buddha mind, we slowly feed back into the layers of information in our human mind. The more we can retain from the Buddha mind into our day-to-day a samsaric experience, the more our samsaric experience is quelled. It's not as overpowering. It's not as demanding. It's not as attached. And only through regular, constant rebathing, reinvoking our Buddha mind, do we slowly navigate our human mind more and more toward what we know is the Buddha mind experience. In fact, even if we're in our human mind, samsara, we can see with the Buddha mind what we normally would not integrate into our human mind's samsaric thinking. Does that make sense? So what we're going to read in part three here is an explanation from the mid-13th or early 13th century by Nichiren that this has been talked about since long, long, long ago, but it's still to this day a matter of doubt and confusion in people as to why do we need to chant? What does it mean to chant? What purpose does it have? And the language used here will be that basically all of the teachings are tools, expedient means to understand the experience of Buddha mind, Buddha-ness. But until you experience it, all of that's just words. So all of it is metaphor. And metaphor is the same as the experience, but only if you experience in order to understand the metaphor. They coexist. But without the metaphors, we can't dangle the carrot in front of each other. We can't say, gosh, come into the water with me. It's so refreshing. You'll feel so good. I can't even explain why. Somebody who's never been in the water might look at you like, that's too dangerous. I'm afraid. I'm not going to go in there. And so we have to develop all of these analogies, metaphors, other devices, expedient means, skillful devices, to get you to understand that this is not harmful. This won't shock you. It won't hurt you. Anything this does will be super positive and you will be better for it. All of this is just language. But it's not the experience itself. We may come close to inspiring thoughts in you that will remind you of something that you could abstractly relate to the experience, but it's never going to be the experience until you experience it. This mandala of your Gohonzon is a mandala to awaken the Gohonzon within you that's extant. You have no idea what that is. You have no idea why these words are even significant until you do it, until you chant, recite the law, the being in the water, in the body of water. You cannot experience it. This is why this is called a mirror or a mandala. It's a focus point. It's a reflection. But it is not it. It's your act of performing it that creates it. You can't, they're one and the same in that one is a tool to experience it in samsara, and the other is simply the experience of it in samsara. So it's a minor distinction, but it's a very important distinction. And the reason why we invoke it. When you invoke something, you don't create it. When you invoke it, it's already there. You simply awaken it. And it is your fundamental existence, your core, your life itself. You could argue, I experience life itself all the time. Why do I need a tool to do that? Because the life you experience in mundane, earthly, human, samsaric form is filled with delusions, with ideas that are not real, that are very temporary and create attachments and sufferings and all manner of confusion in your mind. That's what Buddhism's about, is clearing away those delusions, those misunderstandings of reality, so that you can experience everything in its maximal potential experience. So, with all of that, blah, 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 as someone, one of you quoted me on saying too often, and now I say it even more, so there. let's continue. I debate sometimes whether or not this is a go show that I should point early students of Buddhism to, just because of this question. But you never know, you know, I see all of this now from 40 years of practice. I don't know how I would see it with 1 week under my belt, right? Question, Nichiren continues. How do we know that these two interpretations can be used and that the title can be taken as both the entity and the metaphor? When the great teacher Nan Hui explained the five characters Myoho Renge Kyo, he said, quote, Myo indicates that all living beings are Myo, or wonderful and difficult to understand. Well, that's pretty self-evident, isn't it? We're all wonderful and difficult to understand. Ho indicates that all living beings are Ho, or the law. And we've already discussed that the law is simply the observation of instantiation, manifestation, you know, formations of energy. Renge, or lotus, is the metaphor that is employed here, end quote. It would seem then, would it not, that both Nan Hui and Tendai interpreted the lotus as a metaphor? Answer. Nan Hui's interpretation is like that of Tendai's. While it is not entirely clear from the sutras that there can be two interpretations, that is, taking the lotus as both entity and metaphor, Nan Hui and Tendai discern these two meanings through the treatises of Vasubandhu and Nagarjuna. That is to say, in the treatise on the Lotus Sutra, we read, quote, the words Myoho Renge have two meanings. First, they signify the lotus that appears on the surface of the water. The way in which the lotus emerges from the muddy water is used as a metaphor to explain that when the Thus Come One joins the multitude of listeners, seats himself on a lotus in the same manner as the various bodhisattvas, and expounds on the unsurpassed wisdom of the Thus Come One and on the enlightened state of purity, the various voice hearers hearing this are able to obtain the secret storehouse of the Thus Come One. Now, all of that, again, is expedient means derived from the Lotus Sutra itself to explain the transition from the metaphor of invoking the Daimoku to the experience of the law, the experience of, I hate this word, but it's accurate here, transcending human mind to awaken and experience the Buddha mind. The two coexist. You have to remember that they're not separate things. They're only separate because of our human mind's limitations. But the Buddha mind's already there. You're just not, well, you're not consciously using it, but it is at work. Second, the words Myoho Renge signify the lotus opening up. This is a metaphor explaining that ordinary beings, though exposed to the Mahayana teachings, are timid and fearful in mind, and incapable of taking resolute mind and conviction in them. Therefore, the Thus Come One opens or reveals his Dharma body in its pure and wonderful awakening, its purity and wonder, awakening in them the mind of resolute mind and conviction. Again, this is just other words trying to define that transcendence, that ability. See, I don't like transcendence because in the West it's used to think of anything moving from one state to another state that is separate. And I want to remove that idea of separate from you when I use that word. If I can come up with another word, I will replace it. But we maybe engage a more profound universal reality, and that our reality as samsaric beings is very, very identified and distinct. The ego, right? It's the self. And when we can see beyond all of the constructs that make us think self, we can see what we truly can think and are thinking, but is obfuscated from our thinking by all of these various attachments. So we engage through all of that mire the fundamental actual happening of consciousness that is not attached, that isn't contrived, made up, non-ego, that is this process of life, that everything and everyone is a function of, right? In this passage, the word various in the phrase the various bodhisattvas refers to the fact that the bodhisattvas of both the Mahayana and Hinayana teachings, upon arriving on the scene when the Lotus Sutra is preached, are able for the first time to understand the lotus of the Buddha. So you see how the word lotus is being used here. It's saying a flower is a flower, but the flower you perceive as a bodhisattva is different than the flower you perceive as a Buddha, let alone the flower that you and I perceive when we walk down to a river and go, wow, isn't that pretty? That's our human consciousness looking at that flower with all of its various attachments and judgments and so on and so forth. But that same lotus, as seen through Buddha, has a very different construct, a different realization. I know difficult to understand isn't a big enough statement. If for no other reason than this plethora of words to try to define something that is easily achievable by anyone, but having some idea what we're looking for is so necessary to us humans that we won't even bother to look if we don't have a preconceived idea of what it might be. That's what he just was saying, is that where was it? They are timid and fearful in mind and incapable of taking resolute mind and conviction in them. Because to have a resolute mind is to have an idea what you're resolving to. That's part of the samsaric difficulty that stands in our way. To be adventurous and say, yes, I see all of the things that I'm attached to. Even if I don't see all the things I'm attached to, I know I experience suffering. I know I experience pain. Pain in my heart, pain in my mind. And if there's a way to expiate that so I don't experience that, let me add it. Let me get in there. I'm resolved to understand and experience my life without all of that garbage. It's hard. it's hard because you don't have a clear idea what that would be like. This is why Myoho Renge Kyo. This is why we chant, to invoke that which we have no idea already exists. And when we start to break down the barriers, we start to get a better idea of what that is, and that's how we increase our resolve. We build our resolute mind, because we get inklings of it every time we do it. Clarity, things resolve, things become clearer, obstacles start to fall away. Unexpectedly, you practice for a while and you find that, hey, you know what, I just noticed that thing that I've always been frustrated with, it hasn't happened in a long time. It's not happening anymore. Could that be? Yes, it is. Could that be? It is exactly what you think it is. It is your Buddha mind starting to influence your human experience. Not just the way you think, but how your world around you changes because you're changing the way you think. That's super hard to understand. It's wonderful, but it's super hard to understand. Arrived on the scene, blah, blah, blah. This is clear from the above passage in Treatise on the Lotus Sutra. Therefore, we know that the statement that the bodhisattvas had already gained entrance to enlightenment through the various sutras was no more than an expedient. It wasn't a lie. It was just saying, look, he went in the pond of water, and look, all that dirt that was on him has been washed off. He's cleaner. He's got a smile on his face. He feels better, right? That doesn't mean that he fully understands being immersed in the water. It's just proof that what I'm talking about is translatable to human experience. It's not fanciful other. Tendai explains this passage of, and this is Nichiren again for those listening on the podcast, I apologize. Tendai explains this passage of Treatise on the Lotus Sutra as follows. Quote, if we are to explain the meaning of the treatise, one would say that when the Thus Come One causes ordinary beings to see the Dharma body in its purity and wonder, he is showing them the lotus that opens through a wonderful and difficult to understand cause. And when the Thus Come One enters the multitude of listeners and seats himself on a lotus, he is indicating that the land produced is a wonderful and difficult to understand reward is the itself the lotus. Again, language is, you know, and this is a translation, but I think you can see that what Tendai was saying here was that that entering this invocation, this law, this Myoho Renge Kyo, this practice of chanting Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, without, there was no Gohonzon at that time. So there was just the idea of entering that invoking this Buddha mind was itself the process or the label lotus. Not that it's a lotus flower, but the idea, the metaphor of the lotus is a description of what it actually is. And therefore you could call it the lotus, but it's Buddha mind, it's Buddha-ness. So we're playing with language here, and it can be confusing, and I may be making it more confusing. If so, I apologize, but let me go on and maybe it'll be more clear. Nichiren continues, again, When Tendai wishes to give a detailed explanation of the dual interpretation of the lotus as both entity and metaphor, he quotes the passage in the Great Collection Sutra that reads, quote, "I now bow in reverence before the lotus of the Buddha." And the passage in the treatise on, end quote, and the passage on the treatise, in the treatise on the Lotus Sutra that has just been quoted to support his argument. As he explains, quote, "According to the Great Collection Sutra, the lotus is both the cause and the effect of constant practice or resolute practice. When the bodhisattvas seat themselves on the lotus, this is the lotus of the cause, practicing. But the lotus of the Buddha that one bows before in reverence is the lotus of the effect. You invoke, and then there's the invoked. Or, according to treatise on the Lotus Sutra, the land surrounding one is the lotus. That is, the bodhisattvas, by practicing the law of the lotus, are, as a result, able to attain the land of the lotus. Thus, we should understand that the objective realm and the subjective being who depends upon it, the cause, that is the bodhisattva, and the effect, that is the Buddha, are all the law of the renge, or lotus. Therefore, what need is there to employ metaphors? But because dull-witted people cannot understand the lotus of the essential nature of phenomena, an ordinary lotus is introduced as a metaphor to assist them. What harm is there in that? And elsewhere he says, quote, "If we do not use a lotus, then what are we to employ as a metaphor for all the various teachings that have been described above? It is because the law and the metaphor are expounded side by side that we refer to them by the phrase myoho renge." Next, we come to Great Perfection of Wisdom by Bodhisattva Nagarjuna, which states, and just as an aside, Nichiren is talking about Perfection of Wisdom here by Bodhisattva Nagarjuna. I've referred to those teachings many times in my videos, as you'll recognize. States, quote, "The lotus represents both the law itself and a metaphor for it," end quote. The great teacher Dengyo, explaining the above passages from the treatises of Vasubandhu and Nagarjuna, writes as follows, quote, "The passage in Treatise on the Lotus Sutra says that the lotus of what is called Myoho Renge Kyo has two meanings. It does not say that an ordinary lotus has two meanings. On the whole, what is admirable here is the fact that the law and the metaphor that is used for it resemble each other. If they did not resemble each other, then how could the metaphor help people understand the meaning? That is why Great Perfection of Wisdom says that the lotus is both the law itself and a metaphor for it. A single mind, the entity of Myoho Renge Kyo, simultaneously brings to maturity both the blossom of cause and the calyx of effect. This concept is difficult to understand, but through the use of a metaphor, it can be made easy to understand. The teaching that fully sets forth the principle is called Myoho Renge Kyo," end quote. These passages from the treatises and their explanations quoted here will make the matter clear, and one should therefore examine them carefully. Nothing is hidden or held back, and hence the dual explanations of the lotus as both entity and metaphor are fully expounded. In the final analysis, the meaning of the Lotus Sutra is that the metaphor is none other than the entity of the law, and that the entity of the law is none other than the metaphor. That is why the great teacher Dengyo, in his commentary, says, quote, "The Lotus Sutra contains a great many metaphors and parables. However, when it comes to the major parables, we find that there are seven of them. These seven parables are none other than the entity of the law, and the entity of the law is none other than these metaphors and parables. Therefore, there is no entity of the law outside of the metaphors and parables, and there are no metaphors and parables outside of the entity of the law. In other words, The entity of the law refers to the entity of the truth, of the essential nature of phenomena, while the metaphors and parables represent the entity of the wonderful and difficult to understand law as manifested in actual phenomena. Whew. The manifestations are none other than the entity of the truth, and the entity of the truth is none other than the manifestations. Therefore, it can be said that the law and its metaphors constitute a single entity. This is why the passages from the treatises and the annotations by the Tendai school all explain the lotus as both the law itself and a metaphor for it. This passage is perfectly clear in meaning, and therefore I need say nothing further. Whew! Okay. Well, I agree, but I do recognize that I agree as a result of many, many, many years of study and practice. So I'm at a loss right now at what I could add to this, just as Nichiren here is saying, you know, pretty much says it all. I don't need to add anything to it. But we're not in the 13th century anymore, and some of you may very well have want some kind of clarification, or I ask that you chant upon it, that you think about it, this teaching, and you chant through it. And if after chanting a good bit of Daimoku, I suspect that just after trying to ingest this Gosho, you'll have many insights. I really think this is an important, very important Gosho. And I would like to see some validation of that from you guys. So tell me, digest it, take your time, read it for yourself. And if there are lingering confusions, put them in the comments. If you achieved some wonderful aha moment or insight, share. Let us know. I want to hear from you guys. I respect your practice. I respect you guys so much. Those of you who are on my Patreon list, and those of you who are not, who somehow find the opportunity to send me financial support or supplies, you keep this podcast going. I will continue to make them in whatever condition I can, but your help is invaluable, and I so appreciate those of you who can take the time and make the effort to support it. Jay, John, I every time I want to name them, I should write these down and put them on a screen or something. just know that I resist doing that because there's a lot of you who cannot afford financial support, but you follow my videos and you make comments, and I know your practice is strong. So I want to laud you guys as well. But you know, we live in a capitalist world. So anyway, thank you very much. I'm not sure if part four is going to delve any deeper into this. It sounds like Nichiren answered the question. So I'm looking forward, as you are, as to how this Gosho goes on. But I will see you then. In the meantime, take care of your health. Namo myoho renge kyo. Stay strong in your practice. That's always the answer, isn't it? Take care. Bye.